But Not the Song, Chapter 2. When they get to the market, they take Ryan out of the cage and chain him up with all the others. The guards are laughing and joking crudely. One of them grabs him by the hair to hold him still, while another smears paint on his face. Ryan doesn't fight them this time, even when they shake him and ask him where his teeth are tonight. They're probably doing him a favor by making him look ridiculous. And when they grow bored, one of them slaps him on the face and says, "Pretty as a picture, little whore." And they walk away, still laughing. Ryan's legs are so cramped from a day in the cage, he can barely stay upright. But he stands on his toes and stretches as tall as he can to look over the heads of the slaves. He can't see Spencer anywhere. There are too many slaves, and it's growing too dark. He sees the hideous carriage arrive with its equally hideous passengers, and he sees the master fall over himself, fawning over them. He sees the little man go through the lines making notes, and he sees him pull Brendan, of all people. Who the hell would want to buy Brendan? He's too small to be useful, and fucking annoying, too. Out of the line. He sees money change hands, and Brendan vanishes into the carriage with the rich couple and their servant. The carriage rattles away, and Ryan sees the master speak to the guards. The guards turn away a few people who are approaching the market curiously, but he can't see Spencer anywhere. It doesn't mean anything. There are a lot of slaves, and Spencer was with the injured ones earlier. The master always keeps the injured slaves. Sorry, sorry, Ryan thinks desperately. So fucking sorry. In a separate group. Shackled apart, only showing them if a buyer is interested in a bargain. It doesn't mean anything. The master doesn't seem interested in entertaining more buyers, but they keep the slaves chained up and the guards wander through the lines. Ryan curls into himself against the cold and tries to ignore his growing dread, but his mind is filled with the tiny noises Spencer was holding back when the master whipped him. The cold of Spencer's skin, and the warmth of his blood on Ryan's hands. The jeers of the guards hounding the wounded slaves all day. And it doesn't mean anything. Ryan doesn't sleep at all that night. When dawn comes, he stands awkwardly with the others and looks around again, trying not to hope. Nothing. No Spencer. He squeezes his eyes shut for a long moment, opens them again, and tries to peer around the wagons without obviously craning his neck. But it's no use. He's standing in exactly the wrong place. He suspects it's on purpose. What he does see, barely half an hour after daybreak, is the ugly red and white carriage drawing up again, and the stupid lord who bought Brendan leaping down and sauntering back into the market. "Good morning!" he yells. "Lovely day for business!" The dawn mist is still hanging in the air. All over the caravan, slaves and guards wince and rub their eyes. And the mercenary standing behind Ryan's group of slaves mutters audibly, "Fucking hell." It takes nearly 5 minutes for the caravan master to appear, stumbling out of his wagon with a cut on his chin from shaving and his shirt untucked in the back. There's an oily smile on his face, but his jaw is twitching. Ryan hides a smirk. They all know the master's not a morning person. The lord slaps the master on the back, a little too hard to be the companionable jester it looks like. "Good man," he says. "Good to see you didn't run off in the night." "My lord, I would never..." "Of course, of course. Anyway, you've been holding out on me. My wife's new toy tells me you stock toys for gentlemen, too." The lord winks exaggeratedly. "It so happens I've been looking. Just between us, her ladyship is..." He smirks. "Well, a delight to the eye, and we'll say no more about that." Ryan doesn't think much of the lord's "just between us." Apparently, a troop of mercenaries and a couple hundred slaves listening avidly to gossip about his wife's marital failings don't count. His lips curl in an automatic sneer of disgust, and it's not until the lord and the slaver are walking towards him that he catches up with the conversation and realizes that by toys for gentlemen, they mean him. And fucking Brendan, fucking interfering Brendan, why couldn't he keep his fucking mouth shut? "Smile, princess," murmurs the guard behind him. He grabs Ryan's wrist to untie him from the line. "Smile real pretty or your boyfriend gets it. Again." Ryan seizes onto the fury that rises instantly in his throat, uses it to keep himself standing up straight, to hold his face still, to force back the hot sting behind his eyes that means tears are coming. Otherwise, he'd collapse under the weight of sheer relief, because if they can still threaten Spencer at him, if they can still laugh at him like that, that at least means Spencer's still alive. When the Lord reaches him, Ryan looks straight at him, meets his eyes with a dumb, insolent glare. Spencer's told him 100 times not to do it. "They hate that, Rye," he said. "They hate anything that looks like you're fighting. There are ways around. You've just got to be sneaky." But Ryan always forgets to keep his eyes down until it's too late, until they've already seen how much he despises them. He glares, and the Lord watches him back, unmoved, through dark, amused eyes. "Feisty," he comments. Ryan keeps himself from snarling, barely, and holds his head high as the Lord walks a slow circle around him. "A little on the scrawny side," the Lord says. It's all Ryan can do to keep from turning his head to keep the man in sight. He's shorter than Ryan, short enough that there's no way he should be intimidating. But the caravan master and mercenaries are watching him with something that looks like both awe and hunger. The master smiles thinly and fixes Ryan with a warning glare. "I assure you, my lord, he is very well trained for anything you might require." The Lord smiles. It's not a pleasant look. "That's what they all say. Well, my men will..." Ah, there they are now. There are several men on horseback approaching the caravan. They are armed and fitted in fine clothing, and the horses are well-bred and healthy. The Lord turns without looking at Ryan again and says carefully, "Put this one in my carriage, and we'll discuss payment for the rest." He strides away, and the master hurries after him like a dog following a scent. The guard shoves Ryan forward roughly. "You heard the man. Looks like he wants to take you special, apart from the others." It takes Ryan a few seconds. "The rest," the Lord said. He swivels his head around to look. The guard wrenches his arm to pull him back into place. But Ryan sees enough. The Lord has several men. Not as many as the master has mercenaries, but enough to control a large number of slaves. Maybe not all of them. Maybe only the able-bodied. And Ryan tries to turn again as they walk by the wagons, struggling for a glimpse of the injured slave set apart from the others. The guard twists his arm again with a laughing, "Nice try, sweetheart. Scared for your wedding night?" Ryan lashes out without thinking, letting loose a wordless growl and kicking at the man's legs, even though he knows it's futile. The man backhands him almost casually, and Ryan stumbles to his knees, automatically curling into himself against the guard's boots. But instead of the kicks to his back, Ryan feels only a hand grabbing his arm and pulling him to his feet. It's the man with the gladiator tattoos. Zach, that's the name Brendan used. And he lifts Ryan as though he weighs nothing. "I got this one," Zach says to the other guard. "Go handle the others." The guard grunts in acknowledgement, and when he's several steps away, Zach says quietly, "He's buying all of you, taking the injured ones in a wagon to his plantation." Ryan looks at him in surprise, half a question forming on his tongue. "What?" But if Zach notices, he doesn't let on. He pushes Ryan over to the garish carriage, opens the door, and shoves him inside. The door shuts firmly behind him. The inside of the carriage is upholstered and painted and empty. When the Lord comes back, it's going to be just him and Ryan. Ryan stands between the seats, unwilling to touch the ugly red velvet favored by his new master. He thinks about trying the door, about making another attempt at running, It might work. Everyone will be distracted by rounding up the other slaves. The Lord is quite clearly as thick as a brick. The Lord has bought Spencer. Spencer won't be able to run with him. Ryan realizes his hands are shaking, and he glares at them until they stop. He has to. He doesn't know what he has to. Only that he has to get Spencer out. Out somehow. Every time he closes his eyes, he sees the whip coming down again, and he could map the pattern of half-healed scars and mottled bruises on Spencer's back by memory, match each layer to his own transgressions, every memory a sharp knife. He has to... something. And the Lord owns him, and the Lord owns Spencer. And when he thinks about it like that, the decision is easy. In fact, it's barely a decision at all. The carriage interior is full of reflective surfaces, all shiny and gold, distorted like carnival mirrors, but enough for Ryan to see his face paint, to get some idea of how he looks. He rubs the thick coal around his eyes until the smudges look intentional, and he rips a strip off his thin shirt to wipe off most of the haphazardly smeared rouge. With it gone, he doesn't look quite so cheap. And after a moment's consideration, he smudges what's left so it looks like it's emphasizing his eyes as well. There, he thinks, practically sophisticated. All around him, the curved, brassy reflections are giving him a twisted smile. The tattered remainder of his shirt isn't worth saving. He shivers for a moment, then strips it off before he sits down on one of the ugly velvet seats. When the carriage door finally opens again, Ryan doesn't know how long he's been waiting. He knows what he's doing. A memory. Spencer kneeling in front of him, putting his hands on Ryan's face where the paint is flaking, and whispering, "No, no, no." His voice chilled with fury, saying, "I'll kill them all, Rye, and you can." And Ryan forced himself to be tough, to sit up, to say, "Don't say it. Don't even think about it." To say, "I don't want to survive if you don't." He can do this. He will. There are ways around, if you're sneaky. He counts to three inside his head and lets himself be looked at. He can feel the Lord's eyes on him, and when he glances up through his lashes, meets the Lord's gaze. He shifts in a way that might be coincidental if it weren't so clearly an invitation. "My Lord," he murmurs. He can't quite force his voice into the eager tone he wants, but it's a start. The Lord stares at him for a long moment and says, "Don't move." He slams the carriage door behind him, sticks his head out the window, and yells, "Drive on, Martin!" He drops down onto the seat opposite Ryan as the carriage rumbles underneath them and begins to move, and tugs a couple times at his collar as if he's too hot. "It's Ryan, isn't it? Ryan..." Ryan says, "Ross," automatically, and only remembers afterwards that slaves don't have surnames. The Lord doesn't seem to think there's anything wrong about it, though. "Peter Lewis Kingston Wentz III," he says back, as if this is an actual introduction. He grins, baring very white teeth in his dark face. "You may have heard of me." Ryan doesn't know what to say. He licks his lips nervously and only realizes what that looks like when Peter Lewis Kingston Wentz III blinks, stares, curses under his breath, and says, "Don't you have a shirt?" Ryan ignores the question. Thick as a brick. He slips from the seat to the floor and kneels before Lord Wentz, his eyes cast demurely downward. "Thank you," he says. "Do they expect us to be grateful?" he asked once, incredulously, and he remembers Spencer's tired answer. "I never had any clothes that weren't yours first. Cast off and collected throughout the years, wrapped up in a bundle and presented as a gift." And Ryan felt guilt and nausea churn in his gut until Spencer bumped his shoulder, smiled, and said, "It's not like they'd fit me now anyway, skeleton boy." "Thank you?" Wentz repeats, his voice flat with disbelief. the caravan master. Ryan pauses, more for dramatic effect than anything. He is not a kind man, he says. He edges forward a little until he's kneeling beside the Lord's boots, brushing against his knees. Ryan wills his hand not to shake as he reaches to touch the man's thigh, a light, teasing dance of fingers. He hears a sharp intake of breath, watches the Lord swallow with something that might be anticipation. So quickly, Ryan doesn't even see him move. Wentz grabs Ryan's wrist and yanks it away from his leg, hard. Where's the knife? Ryan stares. Where? What? He stammers, completely forgetting his act. Oh, come on, Wentz says, rolling his eyes. You're good, I'll give you that. But the last time a courtesan got this close voluntarily, it was because she wanted to run me through with a dagger. If it's the same to you, I don't really want to repeat that experience. He adds thoughtfully, I did get an impressive scar, but my wife would kill me if I offered to show it to you. I don't. Wentz's grip on Ryan's wrist is firm, but not painful. And when Ryan pulls away, he lets him go. I wouldn't, he begins. But it's hard to form the lie. It's not like he hasn't thought about it. It's not like he hasn't tried dozens of times to steal a knife for that very purpose. Sure you would, Wentz says easily. I can't say I blame you either, but I really don't see where you can be hiding a knife. So now I'm curious. What do you want? It takes Ryan a moment to remember what he's supposed to say. To please you, my lord, he says. To get on your good side, he thinks. To make you like me. Yeah, that's real convincing, Wentz says. Do I look like an idiot to you? Ryan narrows his eyes. Wentz laughs a loud braying sound. That asshole traitor has no fucking idea what he had in you, did he? Ryan drops his gaze again, suddenly scared of what Wentz will see. My lord. Stop. Seriously, don't, Wentz says. I like you better when you're not pretending. Did you really bite the last guy who tried to buy you? Without waiting for an answer, he reaches out and touches Ryan's shoulder softly. Ryan carefully does not flinch away. Go sit on the seat, he says. We've got a long ride, and there's no point being uncomfortable. Ryan doesn't move. Go, Wentz says, shoving him gently. Oh, and if we get attacked, run for the woods. You look pretty fast. You might be okay. Attacked? Ryan backs away and sits down awkwardly, as far from Wentz as he can get in the small space of the carriage, presses into the corner on the opposite bench. The horse's hooves pounding and the carriage wheels rumbling over the rough dirt road are the only sounds. Wentz apparently takes Ryan's retreat as his cue to relax. He stretches out on the seat and puts his feet up, one arm thrown across his face. After a moment, he says, Whatever it is you're thinking about asking me, you should probably go ahead and ask me. I didn't say anything, says Ryan, and belatedly adds, My lord. Wentz looks up and rolls his eyes. I told you my name, Ross. You can keep my lording me if it makes you feel any better, but I don't see much point. He pauses. You're wondering why we'd get attacked, aren't you? Ryan nods. There doesn't seem to be much point in denying it. But we've only just met, so it's a little too soon to be telling you my secrets. Wentz winks at him. Stick with me long enough, and you'll find out. Ryan's only sticking with Wentz until he can find Spencer and come up with a way for both of them to escape. But he nods again anyway. They fall back into silence, and Ryan focuses attention on the landscape zipping past outside, watching Wentz out of the corner of his eyes in case he decides to move suddenly, or anything. Wentz doesn't look dangerous. In fact, he looks half asleep. But Ryan didn't trust him 10 minutes ago, and he doesn't trust him now. They've been on the move for nearly an hour, and Ryan's almost relaxed when the carriage suddenly jolts and shudders to a stop. Wentz jerks away, swears loudly, and shouts, "Martin, what the hell?" Seconds later, the door is flung open and Wentz's driver appears. "Pete," he says urgently, "it's Tom." Wentz moves fast, shoving past his servant to climb out of the carriage. Ryan stands up to look out the open door. There's a man waiting in the road, breathing hard, as though he's just run a race. His left hand is clenched around his upper right arm, and blood is seeping between his fingers and staining his shirt. "What?" begins Wentz. "Soldiers," says Tom, if that's his name. "Two squads. Pete, the inn's surrounded. Everyone's under suspicion. They're not letting anybody leave. I managed to get out. They shot my horse." "Let me see your arm," says the servant, Martin. Tom pulls away. "It's fine. It's nothing. I'm glad I caught you here. I have to warn. Will you give me one of your horses?" "You're injured, for God's sake. You're not riding anywhere," says Wentz. "I don't understand. Why are the soldiers there now? How much do they know?" "I've got to ride," snarls Tom. "You don't know. John, all right? It's John. They're looking for John. They caught some runaways at the border crossing, or there's a leak, I don't know, but they got his name somehow, his and mine, and they suspect." He makes a helpless gesture and winces when it jogs his wounded arm. "Everyone, but her ladyship has it under control. They don't know, they can't prove anything, but they've got warrants for John and for me. When her ladyship said he wasn't there, they settled in to wait for him." "Fuck," says Wentz. "Fuck!" "You can't ride," says Martin. "There's no way you can ride well enough with that arm. You'll never catch him. I'll go." Because that's not going to look suspicious at all. Pete Wentz comes back from the market the day both his grooms go on the run from the law, and his most trusted servant is missing along with one of his horses, says Wentz. He paces a few steps back and forth, scrubbing a hand through his hair until it stands on end. "Not forgetting that Mr. Stump shouldn't even be in the country right now. It's too risky, Patrick." Ryan doesn't know what he stumbled into, but it's obviously huge. Bigger than some nobleman's game. Wentz and his servants are glaring at each other now, and neither of them looks about to back down. "For fuck's sake," says Tom. "Just give me a goddamn horse, and I'll go. I've ridden with worse than this." "Who the fuck is that?" He's looking at Ryan, still standing in the carriage doorway. Wentz and his servant turn to look at him, too. "We rescued him from the same bastard who had Brendan," says Martin. Wentz's eyes narrow speculatively. "Ross," he says, "can you ride?" "Pete," Martin says sharply, and there's nothing subservient in his voice, nothing meek about the way he's addressing Wentz. "He'll run. We can't risk it." "We're wasting time," Tom adds angrily. "Just let me..." He turns to stride away, but bumps his arm against Martin and hisses with pain. Wentz is still looking at Ryan. "Can you?" Ryan hesitates. He hasn't ridden in years, not since he was taken, but he spent most of his childhood on horseback. "You have no reason to trust me," Wentz says. His servant Martin snorts quietly. "You have no reason to believe we're any different from any of the others who have bought and sold you. And normally we have a better way of going about it than this. But we don't really have time to explain everything right now. We need you to carry a message for us." Ryan grips the edge of the carriage doorway and tries not to let them see how much he's trembling. "I don't understand," he says, his voice cracking on the last word. "Nobody buys a slave to warm his bed, then sends him away on horseback with secretive messages. Nobody buys a slave and lets him out of his sight or out of chains at all for weeks or months." Wentz says, "I'm going to set you free. All of you. Every single person I bought from that fucking bastard. You're all going to be free. But I can't do it until we're out of the province, because somebody's going to notice 150 new freed men wandering around and start asking questions. They already have, Tom mutters. My men have already split up into smaller groups to take them somewhere safe, Wentz goes on, ignoring him. He's talking directly to Ryan, seriously and earnestly, as though Ryan is just another man, not a piece of painted property. But if the soldiers have warrants for Tom and John, they know more than I thought they did. We have to warn the others. It's not a question, but Wentz waits. It's a trick, Ryan thinks. It's a lie. It's a joke. It's some kind of scheme. He doesn't know what it is. His mind is reeling, but he can't think fast enough. Can't figure out what it is the men aren't telling him. He opens his mouth to ask for more information, to snap in angry disbelief, to demand something. But all that comes out is, the injured ones, are they? Wentz looks confused, but his servant Martin says, they'll be free too. Your friend is with them? Ryan doesn't know how he knows about Spencer. The other slaves, the mercenaries, Brendan, anyone could have told him, but he nods numbly. After you find John and warn him, he'll take you to the rendezvous. Your friend will probably be there already, Wentz says. Joe's leading the wagon, and he travels fast. Ryan wants to tell them he doesn't believe them. It's not possible. It can't be possible. There are always rumors, yes, whispers and mutters among the slaves about secret societies, about slaves who vanish in the night, and the men and women who spirit them away to freedom. Ryan has never believed it. Slaves who vanish go to be worked to death in the silver mines, or tossed in a shallow, unmarked grave. Not freedom. Never freedom. Unless... Ryan takes a deep breath and licks his dry lips. I can ride, he says. Wentz's face breaks into a wide grin. Good! Great! Okay, here's what you need to... Actually, I have no idea where John is. Tom, tell him where he has to go. Tom shakes his head, but he gives Ryan a complex set of directions, through hills and along rivers, on small trails and into hidden valleys. Then he adds, with input from Wentz, exactly what message Ryan is to convey. The number of soldiers, where they're searching, what they might be planning. Ryan listens carefully, committing every detail to memory. It's a safe place to meet, Tom says when they're done. Johnny will probably see you first and guess that we sent you. Can you remember all that? Wentz asks, suddenly anxious. I know it's a lot, but it's... Ryan stares at him. I'm not an idiot. Wentz is very still for a moment, and Ryan shrinks away from him instinctively. Shit, shit, shit. He forgot. They were talking to him like a regular man, like a person, and he forgot. Wentz laughs, and Ryan is startled into breathing again. Fair enough, Wentz says. Ready? While they were talking, Martin has led one of the horses over and is standing to the side, patiently. He doesn't pass the reins to Ryan right away. We just told you a lot of dangerous information, he says. Patrick, Wentz begins. But the servant, Martin, Patrick, Mr. Stump, whoever the hell he is, waves a hand to shush him. Now, I don't think you're stupid enough to try to take that information and run to somebody else. But just in case you are, remember that no matter what you know, most people won't see anything except a pretty courtesan slave to fuck or sell. Patrick, Wentz says again. We're not going to hurt you, Patrick says. It almost sounds like a threat, though his tone is mild. And we won't hurt your friend. We'll set you both free. Unless you fuck us over. This is too important to risk that. He holds up the reins to Ryan. Here, I'll give you a leg up. Ryan takes a step forward, but Wentz sticks out a hand to stop him. Aren't you forgetting something? Ryan freezes. Chains, he thinks. Shackles. A fucking collar. Something to bind him. They can't be sending him away this easily. Not like this. But Wentz is leaning into the carriage and muttering something to himself. And when he turns around again, he makes a face and shrugs off his jacket. "It's fucking cold at night," he says as he unbuttons his shirt and strips it off. "It's not much, but it'll help. Here." He holds the shirt out to Ryan. Ryan stares at it. "Take it," Wentz says. "We're not sending you into the fucking mountains half naked." Patrick, still holding the reins of the horse, rolls his eyes impatiently. "Take it, kid." "Ryan," says Wentz. His name is Ryan. "Fine. Ryan, please take Pete's stupid shirt so we can get the hell out of here." He looks around anxiously, as though he expects a squad of soldiers to burst from the trees at any moment. It's not safe to hang around in the middle of the fucking road. Ryan looks at Wentz, then reaches for the shirt, slips it on, and buttons it up quickly. It's a fine, soft fabric, the nicest piece of clothing he's ever worn, still warm from Wentz's body heat. Wentz puts his jacket back on, but doesn't bother doing up the buttons. "Looks better on you than it did on me," he says with a grin. "Ready?" Ryan doesn't need Patrick's help mounting the horse, but he steps into the offered hand and swings his leg over the horse's back. The horse, a big black gelding, shies a little under him, but Ryan keeps his seat. He looks down at the three men and thinks he should say something. Anything. But before he can open his mouth, Tom says, "Tell Johnny to keep his sorry ass out of trouble for 5 fucking minutes, if he could manage it, or I'm going to be seriously pissed next time I see him." He looks pale and winces with pain when he moves, but he seems to be waiting for an answer, so Ryan nods. Wentz slaps the horse's hindquarters, and Ryan takes that as his cue to leave. He's about 100 yards down the road, heading back the way they've just come, when it occurs to him he could have said thank you, or at least goodbye. But it's too late now. When he glances back, Wentz has helped Tom into the carriage, and Patrick has climbed up into the driver's seat again. It's about 2 miles down the road to the first landmark Tom named. "It's an old farm," Tom had said, speaking clearly despite being in obvious pain. Half a mile before the bridge, there's a break in the stone wall. Ryan reaches the bridge before he realizes he should be looking for a break in the wall, but it's easy enough to find when he backtracks. "Ride through the old orchard, past the house and all the outbuildings, and there's a break on the far side of the property. That one's a little harder to find." The farm has been abandoned for years by the look of it, and the trees in the orchard are barren, but it still smells sickly sweet, the scent of rotten fruit freshly thawed. It takes Ryan a few minutes to find the break in the wall on the opposite side. It's well hidden by the fallen branches and crumbled stones, and he has to dismount and clear some of it away so the horses can pass through without stumbling. It's surprisingly hard work. He's not used to doing physical labor. "Worth more on your hands and knees, pretty." And after several minutes, he's panting hard and cursing under his breath every time he scrapes his knuckles. The horse watches him impassively, and it doesn't offer any argument when Ryan takes the reins and leads it through the gap. On the other side, Ryan hesitates before climbing onto the horse's back again. Maybe he should hide the gap in the wall. Wentz didn't say whether anybody would be following him. If it's soldiers they're running from, Ryan really would rather not have any of them find him. He's been owned by a brothel near a fort. He knows what soldiers are like. So he lets the horse graze and tugs the branches and stones back into place. It doesn't look like it did, but he doesn't think it looks like an obvious path to follow either. "There's no trail through the woods," Tom had said. "Go due east until you reach the river, then turn south toward the mountains." "East," Ryan murmurs, patting the horse's warm neck. "Then south." A bird bursts from high branches overhead, wheeling towards the sky with a furious high-pitched chatter. Ryan's head snaps up, his entire body tense. His heart is thudding painfully in his chest, and his mouth is suddenly dry. "Just a bird," he thinks wildly. Just a fucking bird. Nothing else. He scared it, and it's just a bird, and there's nothing. The bird is gone from sight, vanished into the dull gray sky, and the woods are quiet. But not completely silent. There are birds singing distantly, insects humming. Some memory stirs in his mind, suggesting that's a good thing. He was never very good at hunting, and he doesn't remember anything he was supposed to learn. He only remembers the battle of wills with his father before every hunt, fighting and sulking and demanding to be allowed to bring Spencer along, the acrid smell of gun smoke and shattering blasts in his ear, staying up late whispering and giggling by the fire, and pretending not to care the next day when his father lectured him about how he would do better in life, make better friends and more useful acquaintances if he didn't spend so much time in the company of an ignorant slave. "He's not ignorant," Ryan had retorted once, when he was feeling particularly defiant. "I taught him to read." His father's face had flushed red with anger, but it quickly turned calculating. "Good," he'd said, nodding slowly. "He'll be worth more when we have to get rid of him, maybe in a year or two." Ryan had stormed out of the house and gone straight to the garden, planning to vent at Spencer like he always did when he fought with his father. But when he got to the gardens, he stopped just outside the fence. Spencer was on his knees between rows of beanstalks, pulling up weeds and tossing them carelessly over his shoulder. He was covered with dirt and the sun was in his hair, and Ryan recognized the shirt he was wearing as one of his own hand-me-downs. Mended so many times, it was more stitches than cloth, stretched too tight over Spencer's shoulders. Instead of opening the gate to the garden, Ryan stepped to the side, off the path and into the shade of a willow tree where Spencer couldn't see him and ask him what was wrong. The horse nudges Ryan's shoulder, its big brown eyes almost curious, and Ryan shakes himself. He's wasting daylight, standing here like a fucking idiot daydreaming in the middle of the forest, and he has a long way to go before he finds this Walker fellow. Even longer before the man takes him to the rendezvous. The rendezvous where they're taking Spencer. That's the only thing that matters. Ryan gets back on the horse and turns its nose east, and he rides for an hour or so until he reaches the river. He stops for only a moment to let the horse drink, then rides south, towards the mountains rising in a dark green ridge above the forest. "Cross three tributaries," Tom said, "and you'll come to a road. You need to follow the road for a while, but don't ride right on it. That close to the border, if somebody sees you, they'll start asking questions." The sun is setting somewhere behind the clouds by the time Ryan reaches the road. He doesn't see any other travelers, but he follows Tom's advice and stays off the road as it winds into the foothills. In the twilight, he rides right past the landmark, but he doesn't realize it until he reaches a fork in the road Tom never mentioned. He backtracks and rides along more slowly, peering into the forest and searching. "Look for a gap in the hill, a gully between two cliffs," Tom had said. He almost rides by again, but the horse's hooves clutter over jagged rocks that fell down from above. He jumps down and leads the horse to the steep slope. The horse's footsteps echo from the stone walls, so loud that Ryan keeps glancing back to make sure nobody has heard them. At the top, there's a pond. That's where you need to wait. If you get there tonight, you should beat John. And if not, well, if you hear gunshots, get the fuck out of there. The pond is dark and flat. There is no moonlight, and all the stars are hidden by clouds. Ryan lets the horse drink, wandering a few steps away to stare into the water. His reflection is no more than a shadowy, wavering silhouette, but it's enough to remind him. He drops to his knees and splashes water on his face. The water is shockingly cold, and he gasps with surprise, but he scrubs at the coal and rouge until his skin hurts and his hands are numb from the chill. When he's done, the sleeves of Wentz's fine shirt are soaked through, and his hair is dripping in strands. But there's no more slick, greasy paint on his face. Ryan stands up shakily and walks a few steps away from the pond, finds a flat boulder, sits down, and waits. After a few minutes, he starts to shiver. The night is cold, and he was stupid. He should have been more careful, kept the shirt and hair away from the water. They take forever to dry in a night like this. He draws his knees up to his chest and hugs his legs, tucks his face into the crook of his arm to warm his nose. The horse is grazing quietly nearby, its hooves clicking softly on the stones, and Ryan's glad for its presence. He knows the road isn't very far away, but in the darkness, in this quiet little valley, it feels like he's the only person in the world. He could leave. There is no master here. No guards, no chains, no cages. There's nothing keeping him here. Nothing except his word and his hope that the men weren't lying about where they're taking Spencer. Nothing but hope. It's been a long time since Ryan believed in hope. He feels a strange, sudden laughter rising in his chest, and he clamps his hand over his mouth before he can make a sound. He hears the voice first. It's too low for him to understand the words, but it's definitely a man's voice. There are footsteps as well, and hooves on stone. His horse hears it too, its ears perked up with interest. Ryan rises to his feet nervously. He doesn't have any kind of weapon, and he thinks he should. Something, anything, in case this isn't Walker, or Walker isn't friendly, or they were lying. He looks around and finds a sturdy, dead branch. Then he goes back to stand beside his flat boulder and wait. His horse whinnies in greeting when the other horse approaches. There's a man leading it through the gully. He stops abruptly, looking first at Ryan's horse, then at Ryan. It's too dark to read his expression, but Ryan can tell from his posture that he's surprised, wary, ready to fight or flee. "Are you John Walker?" Ryan asks. His voice is rough. He readjusts his grip on the stick. The man takes a few steps forward, tugging the horse behind him. Closer, Ryan can see him better. He's shorter than Ryan expected, with a well-trimmed beard and strong shoulders. And he doesn't look frightened to find Ryan waiting there, only very curious. He glances down at the stick Ryan is holding, then back up at Ryan's face. "Do I know you?"
"Are you?" Ryan asks.
"Ryan?" There's a clatter of footsteps on the stones behind the man, and another person emerges from the shadows. Brendan. His arms are full of sticks, but he drops them all and jumps over the heap, launches himself at Ryan, and throws his arms around him. Ryan goes instantly, completely still, too shocked to move. Nobody hugs him. Nobody touches him. Except to hurt. Except to... nobody but Spencer. But Spencer is different. He's allowed. And this isn't... Brendan seems to pick up on his panic right away and lets go just as quickly, babbling, "Oh God, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. I'm just... what are you doing here? Before we left, I told Patrick to get you out of there, and he said he would, but I didn't... Ryan? What the hell are you doing here?" Ryan's mind is whirling. You know these people? He wonders why Brendan was bought first and all the others left behind. But he definitely didn't think Brendan would be on a first-name basis with Lord Wentz's servant. Brendan waves his hand vaguely. "Well, kind of. I used to know Patrick, but it's a long story." "Oh! Ryan, this is John. John, this is Ryan. He was in the caravan, too." The other man steps forward and offers his hand, but Ryan is still holding the branch. "I guess that answers your question," John says, dropping his hand when Ryan doesn't take it. "You're looking for me?" "Yes," Ryan says, forcing himself to concentrate. "I have a message for you from Lord Wentz and Tom. And they said..." He starts shivering again and clamps his mouth shut, takes a deep breath. "They said..." "Hey," says John gently. "Hey, okay, you're freezing. We should..."
"You can't go. Not the usual way,"
Ryan blurts out. And fuck, he's getting it all wrong. He rehearsed the damn message all day in his mind. But he can't. He can't say it. He didn't believe he would find this John guy at all. They could have been lying. And Brendan is here. Brendan is acting like he's happy to see Ryan. And Ryan can't make the words come out. There's a warrant for you. You can't...
Are we in danger right here? John asks. Right now?
No, says Ryan, shaking his head. That wasn't part of the message. He was supposed to find John here, but it was a safe place.
I don't think so.
Okay, John says calmly. You've got a message. We've got blankets and food, and Brendan's got firewood. Let's make camp, and once we've got you warmed up, you can give me the message. Ryan nods, but he stays rooted to the spot, even when John gathers the wood Brendan dropped and wanders away to build a fire. Brendan touches Ryan's arm lightly.
It's okay, he says. John's a good guy.
How do you know? Ryan doesn't ask. How can you be sure? John doesn't look threatening, crouched on his heels by the careful pile of dry sticks, his face illuminated suddenly as he lights a match and leans down to blow on the kindling.
It's okay, Brendan says again.
You really do look like you're freezing. He gives Ryan a long look, then walks over to the fire and kneels beside John. Ryan can't remember the last time anybody cared so much if he was cold. Anybody except Spencer. But Spencer isn't here. He nods, even though neither of them are looking at him, and he says, okay, even though it's too quiet for them to hear. He goes to join them by the fire.
Spencer's lost Ryan. It's dark in the wagon with the other injured slaves. There's absolutely no way he can sit that won't hurt his back somehow. And in the corner, there's a woman dying. She's been dying slowly for weeks, thinks Spencer, though he can't be sure because he can't remember her name. It might have been someone else. The master had them dig a couple of graves about 10 days ago, but when he tries to picture what the bodies look like, they're pale, naked, fish-like things, blank ovals for faces. He's getting hysterical. He doesn't do that. That's what Ryan does. Ryan's probably panicking right now, in that Ryan way which involves going very quiet and stiff and tight-lipped. Spencer puts his head in his hands and breathes into the warm cavern of his fingers and tries not to think about the fact that 2 days ago, someone was actually being nice to them for once, talking to them like they weren't heading straight for the silver mines. Spencer has no illusions. He's always known where they'll end up. The bandages Brendan had put on his back are probably disgusting by now. He has no idea what happened to Brendan. He tries not to think morbid things, but it's difficult. The voice in the back of his mind, that whispers at him in quiet moments ever since they got taken, is always a lot louder without Ryan there to stamp it down, when he can't worry about making sure Ryan eats and sleeps, protecting him from the meanest guards, and convincing him not to get himself killed. His memory chants names at him, his mom and dad first, and Brent killed in the raid. Then his sisters sold together 3 weeks later. People he hasn't seen in years, hasn't thought about in months. And now Ryan, too. Ryan's gone, too. And there's no one left. The wagon stops moving. There's some yelling outside. The dying woman moans. None of the slaves bother to look up. Eventually the door opens.
For fuck's sake! They're all injured! Someone shouts. They're no use to you. Lord Wentz will have something to say about this.
Wentz can take it up with the law, says the newcomer.
He's wearing a soldier's uniform.
I'm in charge around here, and I say if they're healthy enough to stand, they're healthy enough to work. We need gravediggers, and if they're sick already, it won't matter if they catch the fucking plague. I'm requisitioning the lot of them.
You can't do that!
But apparently, he can. Or perhaps once his men don't feel like fighting for a cartload of injured slaves. The
The soldier shakes his head over the dying woman and leaves her where she is. But he rouses the rest of them into the open air where his squad is hanging about with an aura of bored menace. He's kind about it, doesn't hit anyone. It could be worse. Spencer keeps his head down, looks at the grass under his feet. It's plague country. There are soldiers. He doesn't know anyone, and no one will help him. He doesn't even know which way to go. And, he decides at that moment, he's going to run away the first chance he gets. If they catch him, they can do what they fucking well like. He doesn't care. He's lost Ryan, so why not? He listens with half an ear as Wentz's men demand the name of the soldier's commander, as though they actually believe they can do something about it. But they give up eventually. They're outnumbered and outarmed, and a handful of injured slaves isn't going to make a dent in their lord's wealth. They ride away with a mostly empty wagon behind them, glaring back at the soldiers ineffectively. One of the soldiers brandishes a whip while the others rope the slaves together. It's better than shackles, but it still makes it difficult to walk. As soon as the knots are tied, the man with the whip barks, "Forward, march!" The slaves move forward, a shambling parody of a regiment. They haven't gone half a mile when it starts to rain. Spencer risks looking up just long enough to glare balefully at the sky. The road is soon slicked with mud, and all around, slaves are stumbling and slipping. Spencer places each foot carefully and doesn't try to help anyone else, even when the man just behind him falls. He knows how that ends, that it will be worse for both of them if the soldiers notice. So he only tugs forward on the rope until the man finds his feet again. The soldiers keep them moving until well after dark. The rain doesn't stop, and everywhere they go, every farm they pass, they're surrounded by the scent of death and disease. There are smoldering piles that might have been funeral pyres, no longer tended, and fresh mounds in the ground where bodies have been quickly buried. When they finally stop, one of the soldiers comes down the line. Some of the slaves are sinking to their knees gratefully. But even though Spencer's tired enough, he thinks he might actually fall over. He remains standing, his gaze firmly fixed on the ground. The soldier is picking slaves out of the line, untying everybody who hasn't fallen unconscious from exhaustion already, and pulling them off the road. Spencer goes as he's ordered. He doesn't even look up until a soldier shoves a wooden board into his hand. Then he squints through the rain dripping over his face, and the stench hits him. It's a grave, a massive grave, maybe an entire village. Spencer closes his eyes for a second and listens to the soldier shout. The earth is nothing but sticky mud. The bodies have been lying in the open for a few days at least. It's too dark to see anything properly. The rain fills every new hole instantly, and there are no shovels, only flat boards and bare hands. But the soldiers don't want to get any closer to the grave than they have to, and Spencer, like all the other slaves picked out to dig that night, is untied. He kneels on the ground and begins to dig, glancing up surreptitiously every few seconds. He counts the guards, watches their paces, studies what he can see of the nighttime landscape. It's stupid and dangerous. He won't get very far. He can barely lift his arms to dig, much less make a run for it to escape a squad of healthy, well-fed, armed soldiers. But it's dark, he's not shackled, and he can't think of a single fucking reason he shouldn't try. It takes him maybe 20 minutes, half a hole dug, to decide on a plan. It takes him another 20 minutes to dig the hole deep enough that it'll make a decent grave and give him a reason to be moving. The rain is getting heavier, freezing cold drops sliding down his face, and he can barely see 10 feet in front of him. That's good. It means the soldiers can't see either. In fact, they're probably worse off than he is, because they've got lanterns. Their night vision is going to be fucked. He stands up straight and feels thankful for the cold rain on his back that makes the burn from his injuries bearable. He picks up his board and puts it over his shoulder. He's got one chance to do this. He walks slowly towards the main heap of bodies, lets himself stumble a little, cringing a little in case anyone's looking. Then he walks straight past the corpses. There's only one guard standing on the other side, rubbing his hands together and stamping his feet against the cold. He's avoiding looking directly at the gruesome pile of the dead. Superstition, or fear of the plague, or maybe just the fact that they're really fucking creepy. Spencer doesn't know, and he definitely doesn't care. It means the guard isn't watching properly. He doesn't see Spencer walk up silently behind him, and he crumples instantly when Spencer hits him over the head with the board. Spencer's first instinct is to run at once, but he tramples it down. He grabs the guy's hat, boots, weapons, and thick military-issue coat, and puts them on quickly. Then he drags the unconscious soldier by the leg towards the dead body, drops him among the nearest ones, and picks up a body, a dead girl slave, so thin she weighs nearly nothing at all, traces of thick, sloppy paint clinging to her gaunt, plague-eaten face, and a branded P on her shoulder that means public, common property, and drops it on him. There. It'll be morning before they find him. If they find him at all. Spencer's probably just given him whatever disease that girl had. He might have even given himself whatever disease that girl had. He concentrates on the plan. By the time the soldiers pacing the perimeter come by a couple of minutes later, all there is to see is one guy in a uniform with his face muffled by his collar. Spencer gives them a salute. They salute back and hurry on. They don't want to hang around the corpses either. He waits another 10 minutes until the lights from their lanterns are as far from him as they're going to get, then puts his own lantern down and walks off into the night. Dead grass crackles under his feet. His own breathing sounds unbelievably loud in his own ears. He doesn't run. There's a good chance they'll hear someone running and wonder why. He walks and walks and walks. And when he reaches a narrow river, when he turns and looks, the soldiers' lanterns are only distant pricks of light through the thin, scrubby trees. He exhales slowly once and starts to run. He doesn't worry about being tracked. The rain comes thicker, faster, washing him in ice-cold water, washing his footsteps away.